Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to the HBO Boys podcast. Today we're talking about The Last of Us, Season 2, Episode 6, entitled The Price. I'm Ryan. That's Adam.
Hello.
And it's apparently the penultimate episode, which is a thing I learned about 15 seconds ago when Adam told me and reminded me that it's going to be only 7 episodes
Who
this season.
Who does 7 episodes as a freaking season? It's 6 or 8 or 10. What?
Yeah. Choose an even number.
I hate
Druckmann and Mazin. How dare you? All right, but it does kind of make sense that it actually was the penultimate episode now that I think about it.
The context, the things that happened, it did make sense. And, you know, I was talking with another person about the show just as a whole and, like, what I thought about it compared to the game. And, like, I'm a little nervous because I know it was renewed for a fourth season. Are there going to be a fourth season? And there's just so much that we have not even touched on. And there's events that have happened where there should have been some overlap in events that happened in the game. So I know we're obviously front loading Ellie's story in relationship with Joel. And now we're going to get likely into Abby's story for season 3. So that makes me nervous because I hope people keep watching it. Like, that's my fear, is that Ellie and Joel are not going to be as big part of the story if it's going to be Abby. And I just hope people still watch it.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers have been okay this season, but they have taken a slight hit, especially after Pedro Pascal is no longer
in the show.
Yeah, and thankfully we got him this episode. The flashback that we've been talking about that obviously had to happen at some point, although I thought it was going to be more than one episode, but apparently not, was this whole thing. So yeah. I'm glad it happened because I was waiting for all of this plot, all of this story, all of this background to give me some more context. But yeah, not sure how they're going to... Like, at the end of season 3, are we then going to be 3/4 of the way through game number 2?
Man, I just don't know.
Or are they going to finish game number 2 in season 3? Druckmann specifically said he would not use season 4 as a continuation or just, like, what game 3 would be. Mm. But it's hard to fathom what else it would be.
Yeah, I see them using the 4 seasons to get through game 2. Like, that's how much content that there were. There was a lot of parallel stories, a lot of stuff happening kind of at the same time. And in the game, you flip back between Ellie and Abby as a playable character. So, like, you get both sides at the same time. And the story progresses in a more cognizant way, where it's a little disjointed now, I feel. But that's only because I know what's coming. I know what I'm to expect. You know, people who watch the show and have only watched the show, this is all that they know. And I think in that context, it's okay. It's okay.
So let's get into season 2, episode 6, The Price. That's the price you pay for murdering a bunch of fireflies and they don't even exist anymore because you murdered them all.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So we go way back in time. It is 1983. And we see a young Joel and Tommy, and they are living in fear of their abusive father, Javier. Mm. And we kind of poured in to where Tommy was ripped off while trying to buy marijuana. And Joel then instigated a fight after Tommy was being ripped off. And Javier, their father, then confronts Joel, who sends Tommy upstairs and is like, hey, tell me what happened. Joel then was like, I was ripped off by a marijuana, and then I do, I don't know, fight. And then Javier, his dad, was like, I talked to the arresting officer. Yeah, that's just a lie. Tommy definitely did it.
I am, in fact, a police officer as well. So right, I have connections.
I have information, and I know Tommy was doing it, and now you're trying to cover for him. And also, you were covering for him before when you, you know, did the whole fight to get him out of being ripped off. At which point, Joel, assumably, like a young Joel, he thinks that he's about to get the crap kicked out of him because that is historically what his father's reaction has been.
Sure.
But I do think there was a little bit of respect shown from his dad in this moment of like, well, you stood up for your brother and you're also standing up to your brother for me. And then you just said to me, you won't hurt him. So like a third time taking the brunt of all of this for your brother. And there was some sort of a little bit of respect there, I feel like, that his dad perhaps has never showed him before.
Yeah, for sure.
And his dad then opens two beers. He sits down. And he shares a story of how violent his father was.
Oof.
And expresses guilt on the amount of violence that he has, you know, bestowed upon his two boys, ending it with, I hope when you have one or when you have some, you do a little bit better with them than I did with you. And then he gets up and leaves. And I thought this cold open was great.
Yes, very good.
Tony Dalton as Javier Miller, Joel and Tommy's dad, I thought put in an amazing one scene performance.
Mm-hmm.
You most likely know him best from Better Call Saul. I know him best from Hawkeye, being that little weirdo, that like stepdad weirdo.
Which is a bummer because Lalo Salamanca was great. He was so good.
but as I said, like, this was a scene where it seems like him as Joel and Tommy's father was probably a bit more introspective than normal for the first time, maybe ever. We don't know. But I think it gave a lot of context, and it allowed for a bookending moment when Joel is seen in this episode, you know, being a dad.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a dad. Yeah. Joel was already a dad. So he wasn't just a dad, but you know, and Ellie one day, how will she be a dad?
You know, maybe her future child will be better than her. And we might get that line again. Who knows? Foreshadowing, potentially. But
foreshadowing, and she'll be a better parent, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And no, I really loved this scene, not only just as a cold open, but an expansion of Joel's story. This was not part of the game. We heard nothing. We knew nothing about Joel and Tommy's life before the outbreak. Even as much as the first episode of season one, where we get a little bit more of Tommy and Joel before the outbreak happened, that didn't happen. So I really love seeing more context to how Joel is the way he is and why he is the way he is that we didn't get in the game. So I thought this was a really great addition.
Yeah, it gave context to his violence. It gave context to his parenting. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, out of all the scenes that were just strictly additive, you know, from the game to the television series, probably the best one they've done.
Oh, I think so, too. Yeah, absolutely.
Then we go back into the present, and it's 2 months after arriving, not so much the present, actually. Again, it's like probably 5 years from 5 years ago. And it's 2 months after Joel and Ellie have arrived in Jackson, Wyoming. And it shows the scene where Ellie burns her arm to cover a bite that occurred. Obviously, Tommy and Joel know why she did it. She says why she did it out loud. In fact, we learned earlier in the season that she did this. She said it was like a cool thing. She just wanted to wear short sleeves again. But
endearing.
This was a pretty good scene because Ellie, I think, exudes a little bit more like innocent girl vibes while she's on these heavy painkillers. And Joel is just like, you'll be better, girl. It's going to be fine.
You're all right, girl.
And then the rest of the episode is a flashback, flashback upon flashback of Ellie's birthdays.
Mm-hmm. Loved this. So we obviously got the big flashback, which was the museum, which we'll talk about in a second. But I really loved like the Joel making her guitar and, you know, the whole tattoo thing. Like it was so good that they included all this and they kind of expanded their relationship more. Big fan.
So as Adam said, the first birthday, Joel gets her a cake and makes her a custom made guitar that looks sick and has a moth on it that apparently means death. And Ellie gets him to sing and he sings Future Days. I thought her reaching into the cake was a little weird, little
cringe. I didn't
like it. I thought him singing again was a little cringe. I don't know. It just feels like
I don't think him singing was cringe. I agree on the birthday cake. I think him singing was a very tender moment, Joel showing his little tender side. But also this just brings in that Pearl Jam is like a canon in the Last of Us universe. And Future Days is a Pearl Jam song, and I love this vibe with that music and the lyrics and everything. Like, it just is very heartwarming and very touching, and like, I think Bella Ramsey did a great job like acting this scene out, like so much fondness of Joel in her earlier years. And I really liked it. I liked that part.
Oh yeah, no, she has a very real love for him and him for her, and that's shown in this scene. I understand that there have to be moments in this show that live outside how harsh their reality is, but sometimes it just hits weird for me because everyone's dead and there are zombies and Joel murdered an entire hospital of people, but here's a song.
Yeah, I mean, they are in the safe haven of Jackson, Wyoming, which is behind giant walls that clearly can be broken into. But still, there's a sense of like, safe harbor.
1 year later, and then it's Ellie's 16th birthday, and Joel brings Ellie to an abandoned museum where she climbs a dinosaur statue, and then she sits in the Apollo 15 module. And she listens to a cassette that Joel gave her of the Apollo 11 liftoff and imagines herself traveling to space. So, like, as you said, this was in the game, question mark? Was it good in the game, question
very,
mark?
Was it very, very much. And stuff? This was probably one of the most iconic scenes of the second game, aside from Joel getting, you know, off to the cabin. This was a very touching scene in the game. Same here, you know, even when they pan over to Joel watching Ellie just like enjoying this moment inside the capsule, like you see a little tear run down his face. Like, this was a very, very good adaptation, almost one-to-one on what happened, how they walked in, the things that they saw, the solar system diagram that like moved around as she turned the wheel, that was a thing you did in the game. So I would ask, you know, if you really want to see, like, this is
my pizza's
really
here. Keep
similar.
Talking.
Yeah, that's fine. This was a really, really similar scene in the game to the show. And if anyone here hasn't played the game, or anyone that's listening hasn't played the game and they're watching the show, I encourage you to watch this at least cutscene from the game. It was so well done, and they absolutely nailed the accuracy from the set design to the sounds, the characters, everyone. It was so well acted. Brilliant, brilliant addition.
Sorry, I ordered a pizza.
That's fine. Pizza is amazing.
I agree, man. I'm really excited to eat it. Anyway, on Ellie's 17th birthday, she's growing up, and Joel stumbles into Ellie's room as she is smoking the reefer and and getting intimate with Kat, who, hard bong hits. And also, she has a moth tattooed on her arm now, and Ellie's just like, you ruined everything, and I'm moving into the garage. And eventually, Joel, after just like blowing up and be like, you're not doing none of that, concedes to her. And so two things are happening. One, you can see just like there's this distance between them growing, very, very like, you know, father to teenage girl, normal shit. And then at the same time, obviously they have pretty, you know, extenuating circumstances where now she has a tattoo of a moth, which apparently, again, means death or whatever. Catherine Hahn O'Hara said that, so I'll just take it as truth.
Yeah,
but you know, there's literal physical distance between them now when she moves out to the garage. And there's this kind of hole that's being created in the middle of them while obviously Ellie is getting older and older. And perhaps in the near future, her gut feelings about perhaps what happened in the past will just become words she says out loud and wants to know the truth.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, I think they abbreviated some of the stuff in the game. They definitely expanded upon like these little 1 year increments. I like seeing this. You know, you're seeing them grow as a family to some degree. You're seeing them shrink as a family. And it's like, absolutely, the dad, get out of my room. Like, yeah. You know, I want to do stuff and have you not be listening through the wall. And, you know, so. Yeah, no, I like this. It showed a little humanity in this like absolute just death wasteland of a world.
Then we go one more year and it's her 19th birthday and Ellie is sus. We see her sitting there like practicing questions that she has, all very logical questions about
of course.
That day in Salt Lake City. And but that's interrupted because Joel is like, we're going on patrol. And they, on that patrol, encounter Eugene, who is played by Joey Pants, baby.
So good.
Joey Pants, I still hate him from The Matrix, but yeah, I hate Cypher. When I see his asshole. Face. What a dick. But yeah. Great in this in these few scenes. We have a few, Tony Dalton and Joey Pants, just with like guest spots in this episode, both absolutely killing it.
Yeah, he was really, really good as Eugene. You know, this is, again, like I've said, Eugene is a character from the game, but you never see him. He's just kind of written down and you read some things from him and you know, see his place or whatever. Similar that you do in the show. You see his like weed farm. But like, I like that they humanized him and we actually see who he is. And like, I legitimately felt bad. Like, this was like a knot in my stomach during this whole scene because I knew what was gonna happen. Like, they're just alluding to it the whole time and I was just really upset. I was like, no, he's so sweet and all he wants to do is see his freaking wife before he dies. Like, just give him that, man. Like,
I felt different and I'll explain why.
Oh, so, okay, yeah, please.
As I said, Eugene has been bitten and begs Joel to let him see his wife, Gail, Catherine O'Hara's character. And this is why she said in the first episode, you know, you killed my husband. Yeah. And, you know, let me see her before I turn. You can walk me with a gun to my back to the wall. I'll stand 20 feet away. I'll say goodbye. And Ellie convinces Joel to agree. And then he promises her that he will do so. And as she goes to collect their horses, Joel leads Eugene away. And before executing him, or actually just executes him, he does this whole speech about like, it's not about what I need to say to Gail. It's what Gail is going to say to me. And you're robbing me of that.
Yeah.
Which was like a huge, heavy moment. At which point we get a zoomed out shot and the birds fly away. So he got shot in the face. And Ellie then stumbles upon them and is just like, what the heck? You promised. What the heck?
Yeah. So I thought that there was actually like kind of a humorous undertone to this, which not many people may have caught.
Oh, what?
A little bit. So Joel's immediate thought was, I'm going to lead him to this gorgeous vista, and this is the last thing that he's going to see. And I'm doing him a solid by letting him see this beautiful sunset vista in the mountains. But like, Joel doesn't, like, he, in this moment anyway, he doesn't understand that that is not what he wants to see. He says it like, I want to see my wife. I don't want to see this. I don't need a view. I need my wife. And I was just like, oh man, like that fucking sucked. Like, I just felt so bad for this character.
I did too. But at the same time, and like, I don't know. They live in a place that only can exist when they follow the rules.
I understand that. I knew you were going to say that.
And
I
when you bring understand. A person who's about to turn into a zombie closer to it, no matter the circumstance, you raise the risk of everybody dying.
Yeah.
In a world where everybody or most of everybody is almost already dead. And so, like, of course, this is tragic. And honestly, I would have been fine with it going the other way, but I would have thought the entire time, man, this is risky.
Yeah, and it would have been risky for sure.
I think Joel sees it as him making the hard, tough decision when other people won't and taking the consequences of those hard and tough decisions when he knows it's for the greater good, while everyone around him is just like, you're a heartless bastard. And I think both can be true.
Yeah. Yeah. And also the way that these zombies react in this is they're tied to the cordyceps in the ground. So, yeah, it could have been like an echolocation to where he was.
He turns and then they all feel it and then they all come towards Jackson.
Yeah.
So bad, right? That's bad.
Not great. Yeah.
They then go back to Jackson. They bring Joey Pants' body and Joel lies to Gale, telling her that Eugene killed himself.
Yeah, this is where I was like, okay, Joel, stop being a fucking asshole. Like, he did not have to lie about him killing himself. He could have just said, we found him in the woods. He was bitten, and we just did what we did. We have rules to follow. So I agree. It was like a little unnecessary, but it was there to progress the story.
No, I don't know. His point was that, like, let's give Gale, through this lie, the idea that her husband was a hero in the end and didn't die like a shitty death looking out on a vista and not talking to her, which is exactly what actually happened. I don't think this was an altruistic choice, this lie. I'm just saying that I get it, I guess.
Except when Ellie breaks that it was a lie, it makes it seem so much worse.
Yeah, which, because, you know, it is. And I loved this moment from Ellie. And,
oh yeah,
you know, this is also, I think, the moment where she was like, he definitely lied to me about the fireflies years earlier. And she exposes him in front of Gale. Gale, like, slaps him in the face. And as the anger in that moment that Ellie had, I was like, I don't know why this feels more like what should be happening more often. There should be more anger and frustration at the circumstance. And, like, there are a lot of times, especially in this episode, right, where their point is, I think, is that, like, there's hope in any situation.
Sure.
But the cynic in me watching it is a lot of the time like, nah, no,
nah.
You're being weird. Stop.
Yeah. Yeah. I also love the little detail, too. Like, when they were in the forest with Eugene, Ellie said, you know, I want to get the horses and bring them back. And Joel said, I promise. I promise I'll do that. But when Ellie's breaking the news to Gale, he turns to Joel and says, you swore. Which is what he said at the end of season one. He said, I swear, I did not do anything with you in the fireflies. So, like, that little jab too, like, you swore. And she was great. And this was, they gave us a little red herring here, because I thought in the promos this was going to be part of the conversation that Ellie has with Joel when she finds out about the truth, and they pulled it from a completely different part of the show, which is pretty cool. It caught me by surprise,
right? Because we port forward again and see the opposite perspective, Joel's perspective of the New Year's party, and where Joel is talking and then sees Seth be mean and then tackles Seth, and then you know Ellie yelling at him, but now from the other side, again from Joel's perspective. And then he goes back to the house and he's playing the guitar on the porch. As we recall, we saw her walk up and then disappear, and we didn't see anything after that earlier this season. But this time around, we get that longer version of the scene where Ellie comes back, joins Joel on the porch. She demands the truth about what happened with the fireflies. And then Joel tearfully admits that he killed the Fireflies to save Ellie's life, preventing them from finding a cure. If, by the way, it's not brought up in this scene, but like I need to say every time, if a cure was possible, yeah, this was the one dude who could do it, but you don't fucking know if this is actually, but whatever. Anyway.
But the chance, she was robbed of the chance to mean something.
Sure. And Ellie, completely enraged, says that he selfishly took that chance away from her, that thing that could have been her life's purpose. And then Joel is like, yo, I have no regrets. If I could do it again, I would do the exact same thing because I love you. And maybe one day when you have one of your own, you'll understand how deep that love can be, that you would do something like this. Perhaps exactly maybe what I would do in that situation. And then goes back and bookends it and says, when you have one of your own, maybe you'll do better than me, what his father said to him. She then says she doesn't think that she'll be able to forgive Joel, but she's willing to try.
Yeah. And that is the last thing that she says to him forever. So it is putting into context, like, Ellie's revenge tour, and how it, like, why she is doing what she's doing. She never got the chance to rekindle her relationship with Joel, which
was going to definitely put in the work and try. Yes,
absolutely.
So it gave context to like why she was grumpy for 5 years because she was actively being lied to, and then also gave context to why, while watching him die on the floor, her reaction was what it was, because she had just turned a leaf with this because he finally told the truth. And what could their relationship have turned out to be if he didn't get in the show stabbed in the neck with a half of a golf club the next day and in the game driven out of the stadium? So, okay, let's stay here for a sec.
Sure.
Because I have some questions.
Okay.
Out of all the cutscenes in the game, where does this rank in like the zeitgeist of cutscenes when people think about the cutscenes from the game? I assume the number one is Joel's death, but
you're talking about the reveal of like how Ellie found out from him the truth,
right? Because I know this is almost not one to one, but like, this exact scene happens in a different context.
Yes.
In the game. So, absolutely. And like almost word for word sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. It was very similar, different location, different circumstance. But yeah, I see your notes here that you like the TV scene way more. And I actually agree with you on this one. I think the game was weirdly understated. And in the show, I think they maybe played with the script a little bit better to make it hit harder, because in the game, he does not say that he loves her. He does not convey that he has this fatherly love. It's assumed, obviously, but he never outright says it. So I actually like the show version of this moment better than the game for the first time in this whole season.
Right. I watched the TV version, and then afterwards I watched the game version, and I just really liked in the TV version that a lot of it was her asking questions, him breaking down crying and only nodding. I really, really liked it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I think it just carried so much more weight. Whereas the scene in the game, he's not crying.
No.
He's, you know, had that full coffee conversation, which is directly from the game. And then like he's leaning over something, and they're having this, and he finally tells the truth. Now, obviously, for a person who's played the game, you know the context that this scene is in, as I do now as well, because when you watch the scene online, it then shows what is right afterwards, and that was also a moment that, like, I know when that is.
Yeah.
And I won't spoil anything, although I'll say it probably later. But, like, I adored this scene in the TV show, and I thought it was weirdly understated in the game, and it was and Ellie wasn't nearly mad enough, and Joel wasn't nearly sullen enough, and obviously, again, like, it just comes at a way as different a time as it could have in the narrative of the second game.
Yeah.
But I just thought this was an absolutely brilliant scene.
Yeah, and this just reinforced that game Joel is different than show Joel. Show Joel is emotional. He has feelings that he expresses to people. He does not do that in the game. He confides a little bit in Ellie, a little bit in Tommy in the game, but like he doesn't outwardly like cry like this. Like this was one an amazing performance from both of these actors. Pedro Pascal, Bella Ramsey absolutely killed this scene, I think. And I really love that they did this version of it. I love that he like is, this is such a weight on him and he's living with it. Like you said, he's like living with his repercussions and it's so evident in this scene. And it's the most evident it will ever be, obviously, because it's one of the last times he's alive. But yeah, it's just, you hit that like breaking point. And that's it. And so wonderfully done. So I'm very okay with this whole episode, with the events that happened, the little changes they did. It absolutely translates well.
And then we go actually back to the present. We're in Seattle. It's 2029. And Ellie returns to the theater. So assumably she'll get back with Dina and Jesse and Tommy. And they'll go about their business.
Yeah.
I thought this penultimate episode was the second best episode of the season behind the second one, behind sure. The raid on Jackson and yeah. Joel's death, which I think was also really well done. When I look back at the second season, I think this is the one, depending on what the finale is like, which, by the way, is next week, which is insane.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be something I pick out as like one of the most interesting moments perhaps yeah. of the show, but definitely of the season.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm just glad it happened because I also think the way that we're going to eventually describe season two was, or is, the beginning was great. I think they did Joel's death really well. And then the end was great. I think they added stuff that was really cool and they changed stuff in ways that it made it more interesting. And then also, by the way, the middle of the season happened.
Yeah, it was there. But I'm a little nervous about this finale episode, because if you watch the ending of the show where they show like next week on The Last of Us, it's like there were scenes in there that are just from like so far into the game. And I'm like, how are they showing that now? Are we going to get some weird overlap in season three where we're going flashback in for the whole season to see Abby's thing? Like, I just that's what I'm cautiously nervous about with this show, is that it's so, they really pulled the timeline apart in ways I didn't think that they would, because I thought it would affect the story. It's not really affecting the story as much as I thought it would, but it's just like I'm questioning it. Like, what like we're already seeing the pier in the rainstorm from the boat, which is like so far. Like, it's just, I don't know. I don't want to spoil anything. But yeah, I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I think it speaks to that season three is going to need to have flashbacks as well.
It's gotta be Abby's side, because in the game you get them in tandem and you flip back and forth between playing as Abby or playing as Ellie. So you get the context of Ellie's motive, obviously, and then you get the context of Abby's motive and her people. And Yeah, it is.
It is. Thank you for joining us for talking about the penultimate episode of The Last of Us. Finale next week. And you can join us or listen to us more so. There's like more stuff we've ever done. And we also have a Patreon, which Adam's about to explain actively right now.
We do. We have a Patreon. Visit us, patreon.com/HBOBOIZ. For one or more dollars a month, you can get this stuff early. Ad free, some Patreon exclusives, which we try and record before each show. So you get some little tidbits there. And you also get your name read out at the end of the episode. So we'd like to thank our current patrons, Connor O'Dowd, Jamie Lochner. It's time for James's return. I agree. And he might be here for the last episode. So
we
get
all
your
agree.
Hopes up. Chris Wood, Brent Ginn, Craig, John Jewers, Major Woody, Butter Nichols, Susan, Buffalo Pizzle, Seafitz, and Cat's Pajama 10. And thank you, Brent Ginn and Butter Nichols, for being our $5 a month tier patron. We appreciate you and all of you who donate and give money to our podcast so we can do the things that we like to do. Please also follow us on our socials at the HBO Boys Pod or at the HBO Boys Podcast, Threads, Instagram, TikTok. Anywhere that you can listen to our podcast, you can listen to. So like us on Spotify, leave us a comment. I think that's a thing you can do now. Pretty cool. And yeah, we're excited to talk about the final episode. And Ryan, what's the next journey of television or movie that we are going to be doing for these fine folks?
Gosh, that's a great question you asked me right now.
Yeah.
So middle of June is when the new episodes of The Bear comes out. We're definitely going to be doing that. But there's going to be like a middle where there really isn't anything top of mind for us to talk about. So what I'd like everyone to do is write in, whether it be Twitter on Blue Sky or in the Patreon. If you're in that dollar a month, by the way, not that many. So write in what you would like us to do in the middle here, and we'll take all of that in and then probably make episodes about it, which would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, let's do it.
But also, by the way, coming up is A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. We'll be jumping on that when that comes out as well. But everything is just like mid-June, and we're going to lose Last of Us at the end of May. So there's going to be like 2 weeks there, and we need something to talk about, dudes.
We need something to talk about. So maybe it'll just be random, dude, and I'll just complain about Best Buy employees again.
Yeah, it could be that. Or we'll watch movies.
Oh, yeah. We both watched... Oh, no, we did Thunderbolts already. Never mind.
Well, that's true. One of the weeks is probably just going to be us talking about Thunderbolts that was previously recorded. But another week, there's one more week. And what's that going to be, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I watched Captain America Brave New World finally on the plane for work.
Blah.
It was fine.
Okay.
It was fine.
No, it wasn't. Have you ever watched Arcane?
No.
Oh, you should, dude.
Yeah. I know.
Okay. Yeah, and then the new 9 p.m. on HBO for the next 3 weeks. Well, after the finale of The Last of Us is a 3-part documentary about a mortician who was mean. So.
And if you're into that, let us know.
Yeah, let us know, everybody, what you guys think about coming up. But anyway, Adam and I are about to go do the things that we are the thing that we do the best, because podcasting ain't it. It's actually just like eating scrum food. So we're going to both do that. And they're both the food sitting out on Adam's door and behind
literally
me.
Outside waiting. Yeah.
So peace and blessings to all of you. I'm going to go eat eggplant now.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.